This is KPOO, San Francisco, 89.5. You have reached Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth, Healthful Living's radio show. And I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living.
And I'm Martin Matthews, a certified medical hypnotherapist.
And today we have Tony DeFrance on, who is a medical director and the chief executive officer of the Body Plan Institute, which he is. Dr. DeFrance is an interventional cardiologist with a longstanding interest in preventive medicine. He was born in Brooklyn, New York, raised in Marin County, and graduated with honors in biology from the University of California, Santa Cruz. He worked as a paramedic for 3 years before moving to Los Angeles to attend the University of Southern California School of Medicine. He was the president of his medical school class and a member of the Alpha Omega Alpha International Medical Honor Society. He received the Merck Community Service Award and the George Herron Community Service Award and completed his medical residency at the University of California, San Francisco. He received a cardiology fellowship at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, where he was elected chief fellow. Dr. DeFrance has maintained a busy practice in Santa Barbara for the last 7 years and has now moved up to the Bay Area. Hi, Dr. DeFrance. Great to have you on.
Hi. Thanks. It's great to be here.
So we are really excited to have you on because obviously preventative medicine proactive health is the cornerstone of Healthful Living and what we try to work with our clients for. And so it's great to see an MD who's championing the cause.
Yeah, I'm really excited about being more involved in proactive health and the standard reactive model that is practiced now.
That we are thrilled to have you on our side.
Well, this is absolutely my favorite subject, is talking about prevention and how do we address where we've gotten to in our society today. I mean, I'm looking at some of the stats on your website, which is bodyplaninstitute.com. Mm-hmm. And most Americans know that heart disease is a huge challenge. But when we stop and really look at these stats, the fact that it is the number one cause of death in America, that 50 million people suffer from high blood pressure and 12 million from coronary heart disease. I'm not finding the number right now, but every few moments somebody's having a heart attack or someone's having a stroke. Mm-hmm. And we look around in our culture today, the fast food nation that we are, and the rising cost of health care and just all these challenges we have. And we've got to say, what are we doing about it? So it's so refreshing to speak with an MD like yourself who has stepped away from the fray of just dealing with fixing problems and saying, hey, how do I take my knowledge, my experience, to actually work on prevention? So I'd love for you to speak a little bit about a little bit about your background and how this shift that you made. You were just telling me outside about how for 10 years you've been, fixing things.
Exactly.
And how did you come to be doing what you're doing now?
Well, even during medical school, as I was learning typical Western medicine, I had an interest in sort of creating a center that was integrative and combined the best of all the healing arts. It was sort of a dream. But as I went through, I got an interest in cardiology and cardiovascular disease and ended up becoming more of a surgeon than anything. I was an interventional cardiologist. You were saying that at the beginning. And that basically means I went in and fixed arteries, put stents in, put pacemakers in people. So I was seeing people at the extreme end of the disease when they were in critical condition often, getting people to bypass surgery, et cetera. And after doing that for, over a decade, I just more and more felt we were not catching the problem early enough, that it needed to be caught 10, 15, 20 years earlier once there's so many more treatment options. So I actually went and started trying in my spare time to put together programs for people that addressed how to prevent and be proactive about cardiovascular disease. And that I was in Santa Barbara doing that, so I got together a multidisciplinary team of nutritionists, fitness experts, health psychologists, myself, and another physician, and tried to give people an option to help them prevent the disease and help reverse it once we established that they had it. So that's sort of in a brief nutshell. And, you know, one of the things I do is combine technology. So we have to figure out if you have heart disease, first of all, if it's going on. And then we can, once we know if that's the case, we can then design treatment programs. And there's many more options open.
What was your experience when you were doing a lot of surgeries? Was it something that obviously you would hope to catch it before it got to that point, and that's what you're doing now? But when you engaged in surgery, was that something that you found fixed the problem and the person went on and never had problems again? Or was it something that you found that people kept coming back and needing more medical intervention?
Well, it's the latter. I mean, we would go in and put in a stent, which is basically a wire tube. We'd open it up inside the artery and it would act like scaffolding, so it would kind of crush the plaque or the disease against the wall, and the process that created it is still going on. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, it would occur somewhere else. Unless you aggressively go in and change the behavior and the factors that cause the problem, you're just doing a little temporary fix, you know, plugging up a little leak in a big leaking dam.
Sure.
So
even when people do need a severe intervention,
mm-hmm.
they're not changing their ways.
Well, you know, you have people's attention in my experience, you know, there's 5% of the people make drastic changes and stick with them. The other 90%+, you have their attention for 3 months that, you know, this is a life-changing event. You're having a heart attack or someone in your body fixing things. We would get their attention. They'd start exercising, you know, eat differently, do some of the things that we recommended, and then they would fall off the wagon, so to speak. Get back. Life gets in the way.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't incorporate those things into their daily existence and routine. And that's really the key. I mean, a lot of what I do is just not only detecting it, but trying to get the experts in place to help people figure out what they need to do and then help them do it. It's not easy.
Mm. I would imagine. How is your approach to treating heart disease different than what most people come out of medical school learning, or that the average patient would go to an office and get treatment for? How does your approach differ?
Well, I think, you know, one of the primary differences is most doctors see people when they're having symptoms. So someone will come in with chest pain or abdominal pain or, you know, shortness of breath, and then the doctor will go through a series of tests, figure out what's wrong, and then find a medication often, or, you know, most commonly a medication to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about diagnosing existing illness. What I do now is try and be much more proactive and talk to and meet people before they're having symptoms and assess what's going on, what kind of disease is going on in their body, if any, hopefully none, but then designing a kind of customized program, a plan, so to speak, for how to have them stay healthy or improve their health.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep bringing up the word proactive. It's like treating them before they have symptoms and creating a plan, just like, you know, people plan for their financial, for their retirement, and you just take your body for granted. This is about creating a plan to be healthy in 5 or 10 or 30 years down the road, and that's what it takes, I think.
Yeah, sure. What was your experience with the medication part of it? So similar to the surgery, in this culture, we're very busy, mm-hmm. and we don't necessarily understand, a lot of us don't have the time and don't understand the importance of really taking the time to do what it takes to take care of ourselves and eat well and whatever those things are. And so medication becomes a very easy, quick fix, or believed to be quick fix. Do you find that medication is something that is a quick fix, or is it something they have to be on forever? Do you find that it actually helps them over the long term, or does it, similar to the surgery, just kind of keep shifting and moving and creating more need for medication, or becomes less effective as time goes on? Or
sure. Well, with heart disease in particular, I mean, there are certain medicines. You know, the way MD, Western medicine, works is we come out with a drug, we do randomized controlled studies, compare it to sugar pills, to placebo, and see if we get some effect. So, you know, there has been some good science behind some of the medications. One in particular is the statin drugs, the cholesterol-lowering drugs, Lipitor, those kind of drugs. So, and there is very good data behind those helping with heart disease. I don't think those drugs alone are what are going to cure heart disease. I mean, you have to make lifestyle change. There's no quick and easy fix. You can't take a pill and make it go away. You can take a pill, a Lipitor, and maintain your diet, and your numbers will drop on you know, your lab tests. But there's a lot more to it than that. So I try and really combine lifestyle change. Sometimes in people with severe abnormalities in lab panels or metabolic abnormalities, medicines can complement. There's also a lot of alternative. There's supplements and nutraceuticals that I think have good efficacy at treating heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's some role for medications in certain patients, but a lot of this is about changing lifestyle.
Sure.
Boy, it sure is refreshing to hear you say that, because so much of the medical profession, and I guess I'm obviously generalizing here, there's this paradigm of that the answers are outside of us. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, we've got the amount of pharmaceuticals that are being utilized today and the, to use a strong word, the collusion between the pharmaceutical industry and the medical industry and the insurance industry to propagate these and to continue to use them, I believe has affected, you know, in a mass scale, American society's inability to take personal responsibility for their health. We do have a mentality in America that, you know, what the doctor says, right? My doctor said this, my doctor said that. And now we've got those companies, of course, coming into our televisions telling us, go tell your doctor that you need this drug.
Sure.
And it's refreshing to hear you say that, well, yeah, some of those are valid and helpful, but it's certainly not going to solve the long-term problem.
Exactly.
So that brings me back to these notions of these programs that you're putting on and your personal counsel with clients is, how do you address this challenge of really helping people to accept that personal responsibility, to somehow go within themselves and realize that they have the control over their lives, over their health, and that while you are a doctor, mm-hmm. and that is, you know, a phenomenal resource in their lives, that you can't do it for them or you don't necessarily hold all the answers for them. How do you support people in that way?
Well, yeah, I mean, that is the true challenge is how to get people to look at themselves, look at their bodies, and take responsibility. And, you know, we do it through a combination of things. We use health psychologists, getting people to, number one, once we assess what's going on, it's right there in plain view. They get a very visual assessment. They see the plaque inside their arteries. We show them, and that has some, you know, a fairly profound effect, number one, when you're looking at it. And then we work with people because everyone's at a different sort of stage in their willingness to change. I mean, so we work with people. We help them set realistic goals. You know, some people aren't going to want to, you know, run 8 days a week, 7 days a week. They're not going to want to make drastic changes, but we sort of peck away and find what kind of changes they can make and support them through those. And sometimes things, just as you do, you know, hypnosis, working with people to behavior change, there's all kinds of different modalities to do that. And it's really, you got to individualize it. Mm-hmm. Everyone's at a different stage and needs different things to move towards health, I think.
What are some of the most, you know, stubborn things that you come up against? People that, you know, they're even looking at these numbers, they're looking at these pictures and, you know.
Well, I think one of the most difficult things to help people through is diet. Mm-hmm. You know, what they eat. I mean, this is a food-obsessed culture, mm-hmm. and I think our, you know, food industry has gotten us on a really, really bad path. I mean, coming up, they say by 2010, over 50% of Americans will be not overweight but obese, meaning greater than 30% over their body weight. So there's a major, you know, medical disaster in the wings. So I think getting people to change their dietary habits is one of the biggest challenge. Also people that smoke, getting people to quit smoking. Those are two really big challenges we have. It's less difficult to get most people to exercise or go for walks. I mean, that people can say, all right, they feel immediate benefit. Dietary, as you know, it's a really, really tough nut to crack.
Yeah, there's a lot of emotional components with it. And there's also a lot of confusion you know, boy, in the seven, what was it, the '70s, butter was terrible and we wanted to use margarine and it was all about reducing cholesterol because we know that cholesterol is one of the substances in plaque. So we said, oh, cholesterol must be evil. So let's look at cholesterol. So let's go from all the natural butters and things and let's go to synthetic made trans fat margarines. Sure. Now people are hearing, oh, trans fats are bad and trans fats actually raise cholesterol more than naturally occurring fats. And I could understand that. It's very confusing to the population. So what people usually do is do nothing.
Exactly.
Because why are they going to go through all this effort to change something if they don't know if they're changing it for better or maybe even for worse? And so I think for me, that's one of the probably the biggest part of my job is to educate people and to help explain, maybe demystify and break some of the myths that people have about fat is not bad. We need fat. Every cell of our body needs fat. The good fats, the omega-3s and the polyunsaturated and even some natural saturated fats have good health benefits. So explaining to them, I guess, some of the new research that's come out, and instead of just saying, I try not to tell them, do this. I try to tell them why we want to do this. Sure. And hopefully that has more, if they can understand why, then they would be more interested in pursuing some of those changes.
Sure. I mean, there's thousands of diet books out there and books on how to eat. And it's really, I mean, for all of us, confusing and even keeping up. I mean, how many new papers are there a day on diet and what to do? And, yeah, I mean, I the sad thing, too, is you can go out and find data for almost any point of view you want to take. And so people, I think, are really confused. Health professionals are confused. It's there needs to be some good guidance out there, and those are the kinds of things. And I don't think one, like you're saying, one diet or one recommendation fits all. I mean,
exactly.
There's different body types, habitus, metabolic rates, all those things. You really need to work with individuals and customize things.
Absolutely. And that's why when people look at research and start to get confused, it's because, well, in research, typically we have to take one problem and attach one solution to it. And because everybody's not the same, it works for some people, it doesn't work for others, or you have a diet philosophy and it works for 30% of the people really well, and then the other people feel like they failed, but it's just that they have a different body type and different needs. And the other thing is that really, because we're in such a fast-paced society, we haven't really learned to listen to and feel what's going on with our body. And it's also, it takes time to and attention to figure out those things. So really for me, I have to look at the whole person and then we'll make some suggestions. And then my client will try those suggestions and then report back to me, because only the client really knows if they feel good when they make those changes or if maybe that's not the way for them. So, and then of course there's all sorts of ways that we can help determine that, whether it's lab tests or, like I said, just general how they're feeling. But my favorite one before we move on is the whole cholesterol conversation. Mm-hmm. Because the new research is, and some even the old research is showing that 75% of the cholesterol in our body we produce ourselves. Sure. And that only about 25% is from dietary intake. And that if we increase the dietary intake, then we actually reduce our own production of cholesterol, so that diet really has a very small influence on cholesterol, which again is one of these areas where people say, oh, I've had it, I don't get it, forget it, I'm just not doing anything. Of course, things like bacon, because there's nitrates and preservatives and all sorts of garbage in there, is not going to be the best cholesterol food to have, but something like eggs have so many good fats in them and B vitamins and lecithin and all these great things for the heart and the body, that I try to really tell people, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Try to make some determinations or speak to someone that can help you. I know, and one of the questions is always, or the comments is, well, my whole family has high cholesterol, so it's just genetic. Well, you know, how much of that is also lifestyle that you learn from your family? I could say that most of my family has high cholesterol, and I eat easily 15 eggs a week. I eat eggs every single day, and my cholesterol is maybe 160. Sure. And Martin over here, he's a vegetarian, but he eats eggs, and he eats as many as I do, and his cholesterol is something ridiculous, like 130 or something. Right. So, you know, we have to look at the whole picture. I'm not saying that for some people, dietary cholesterol isn't a factor. For some people, it really is. Mm-hmm. But let's determine on an individual basis if that is something that's good for you or something that's not good for you.
Sure, sure.
So I know the show is about you, but I had to throw that in.
I agree. I mean, a lot of it is your liver is what produces the cholesterol in your body, and there's some component that's related to diet, but some of it is genetic, and a lot of the rest of it is lifestyle choices. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a statistic out there about 95% of heart disease is preventable. 5% isn't, because people have genetic defects mm-hmm. that cause super, super high cholesterol levels, and they get coronary disease in their 20s.
Right.
And yeah, so but the rest of it is a, you know, it's a preventable problem.
Mm-hmm. And have you there's all these new cases of children coming up with heart disease. What are your thoughts on what might be contributing to that?
Sure. Well, it's, I mean, I think, again, lifestyle, inactivity, the diet, and children are now becoming obese, getting what used to be considered adult onset diabetes in their tens and teens. I mean, so there's also, you know, in coronary disease, we haven't talked about yet, there's a big inflammatory component. There's an inflammation that happens in the wall of the artery that sort of starts the process and keeps it going. It propagates it, an inflammatory response. And so that same process is happening in kids now. It used to happen in people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Now it's happening in their teens. And what exactly that is, it's probably a combination of environment, the food we take, the lack of exercise. Again, the same sort of lifestyle things. And we see our children now developing coronary disease. I've taken care of plenty of people in their 20s having heart attacks. I mean, it's not that uncommon anymore.
Wow. Certainly there's been a dramatic overall degradation in our diets, the children are eating, and to the schools, as well as just an overall enhanced stressful environment.
Sure.
You know, the more stress in kids today in high school are, you know, so much more competitive environments. Again, I'm certainly speaking of, you know, the Bay Area kind of environment, right, where there's a lot of competition and as we know, stress in the body inhibits really all the natural processes internally. This would be a great time to ask you if you've seen the movie Supersize Me.
I sure have. It's a great movie. I actually have three kids. One of them is TV age, and I had her watch it with me, and she won't go to McDonald's anymore.
Wow.
That's great. Wow. I heard a similar story the other night.
Yeah.
Another family where the kids went to see the movie, I think with some friends or somebody else, and then they were later, you know, I guess out with their parents or whatever, and they took them to McDonald's and said, I will not eat that.
Yeah.
I will not eat that. They've seen and they've understood and they've, you know, integrated what it's going to do to their body, and they just made a choice at that point. I mean, this is it's the kind of thing that can, you know, where a single incident can really radically alter in a good way somebody's life about the choices they make.
Exactly. And I like the way they pointed out some of the industry of food in there, the, you know, the corporate influences, et cetera, that are propagating and getting these ideas about what kids want to eat through commercials, et cetera, at a very young age, and, you know, very unhealthful diets. I mean, it's rampant.
Absolutely. You're listening to KPOO, San Francisco, 89.5, and you're listening to Reality Sandwich, and we have Dr. DeFrance on, and we're talking about heart disease for those of you who just tuned in. And I would love to talk about how emotional factors or psychological factors influence the heart and the heart health. So a lot of us have probably heard stress can have a significant impact on the heart. I think some people can really make that connection because you can feel the physical effects when you become stressed or when you're under chronic stress. But other things like depression or anxieties are a little bit more difficult for some people to correlate to how that's going to directly affect somebody's physical health.
Sure.
But so I want to just get a sense from you of what's your understanding of, or how do you approach it with your clients from this perspective? I know there's a lot of studies that have been done on oh, there was some, there was earthquake, the earthquake in LA.
Sure.
And the heart attacks went up from, I think, 15 a day to 50 a day. And these were not people directly involved in the earthquake, just from the fear of the earthquake. And so, you know, there's some really good data now showing that our physical or our emotional state can have a significant effect on our heart. And I'm curious as to your perspective on that.
Sure. Well, I was down there at Cedars-Sinai treating heart disease on call that night when the earthquake happened. So, yeah, for months after we saw a marked increase in heart attacks. And I've just heard recently the same thing's going on in New Orleans now, where the people are under great, obviously great amounts of stress, that there's a very a markedly increased incidence of heart attacks. So, you know, the bottom line is, I mean, there's a very, very strong body-mind connection. And whether you want to look at that on a hormonal basis, I mean, you can feel it. Something startles you and instantly your heart's pumping and you have that revved up feeling. Kind of chronic stress levels produce all kinds of hormones. You can measure them in the body. One of the major ones is cortisol. You know, adrenaline or epinephrine. There's multiple stress hormones. And there's more and more evidence mounting that those damage the lining of arteries, amongst many other things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, if you want to be more of a scientist, there's clear scientific evidence of the mechanism, how stress is affecting the arteries and health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depression, same sorts of thing. Depression, there's all kinds of, you know, higher cortisol levels. There's multiple hormonal changes. And there's probably other – I mean, there's many things we don't – many more things we don't understand about the body than we do.
Mm-hmm.
We know a lot of stuff, but there's probably a lot of factors in depression and anxiety, and we're not even understanding, besides the hormonal, how that's affecting heart and body health in general.
Right. If I could get a little – I like to say woo-woo. If you think about the heart, what did we do for decades with Valentine's Day? What do we do when we want to describe love? It's all about hearts. And now we know that companionship and love, like a pet, can reduce the rates of heart disease. So it's really interesting that for probably generations, if not hundreds of years, we had this common understanding that love was associated with the heart, and now we're actually seeing that really love and connection can actually have an effect on the physical heart. So I find that kind of fascinating.
It all makes perfect sense to me. I mean, I wholeheartedly believe in this mind-body connection, how our minds impact what's happening in our bodies, both how we feel and what's actually happening, you know, biochemically. And I'm remembering back in my mind some many studies that I've read that correlate, that look at studies of optimists and pessimists.
Sure.
And their incidences of heart disease or major disease, and their incidences of recovering from disease or surgery.
Sure.
Very significant, you know, faster recoveries, right, for optimists. And also for this other dimension called locus of control, which is our personal orientation of the world, whether we personally embody a belief that we affect what happens to us in the events and the factors that happen in our world, or if we have a orientation where just, you know, it's out of our control and the world's going to happen to us.
Sure.
And also people that have that internal locus of control have far greater correlation with lifestyle practices that are health supporting, mm-hmm. Far less incidences of disease, far faster recoveries from incidences of being, you know, injured. Have you noticed these kinds of trends both, you know, now in your more recent practice, but also in the years of getting in there and helping people that had, you know, heart attacks or needed some sort of intervention?
Absolutely. I mean, I think attitude and the way, you know, you look at the world is key to healing, to making lifestyle change, to everything. One of the biggest, there's a big study done, just like you were mentioning, that the biggest predictor of survival after a heart attack is your social support system.
Mm.
And so it's really about, you know, family, connection, friends, and that plays a huge role in heart health. And in my experience, during my years of practice, yeah, the optimists really recovered more quickly, were able to make changes more easily, you know, and healed, and I'd see them less in the office, and they do better. You know, one of the things that I found in my – I had my surgery side, but then I had an office practice, and I'd see – at least half of what I'd see was emotional stuff, you know, presenting as physical illness, sort of somaticizing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, a lot of stressed out people having physical manifestations of their stress. It's extremely common, and, you know, the whole mind-body thing is just at the heart – so, no pun intended, at the heart of all this. I mean, so.
Do you believe people can think their way to illness?
Yes, I do. I'm one of those people that believes as you think, so shall you be. I mean, I think you can create your reality with your thoughts and your response and your reaction to the things that occur
mm-hmm.
in the world.
Yeah.
I was pleased to see on your website under the resources there. You had several books listed there, one of which was Dr. Martin Seligman's book on authentic happiness.
Sure.
And he is a pioneer in this area of optimism and pessimism and its impact on our body and on our life.
Yeah.
It's a great resource for folks.
Yeah, and he approaches it in a very sort of scientific, science-based mm-hmm. measurement manner. A lot of the criticism and difficulty of MDs accepting a lot of this stuff is it's hard to study. It's mm-hmm. hard to compare happy people to sad, and, you know, you have to look at them for 20 years. That's a hard study to do, and doctors are taught you have to have science-based, you know, evidence-based medicine. And so I think he's done a great job in that book in particular in putting some science behind the optimism.
Well, let's follow on that and get to kind of how you've, in a way, stepped out of the fray of the standard doctor.
Sure.
How has the medical community been treating you, for one? And secondly, how do we get more people on board?
Well, the first question, you know, I stepped out of a very busy interventional cardiology practice to do this sort of alternative thing and detect disease early and treat disease early. And I did that originally in Santa Barbara, and now I'm just sort of a newcomer back, well, a returner to San Francisco. And I was surprised at the amount of hostility and, frank, you know, dismay I got from the other physicians. I mean, they thought I was a little nuts to be doing this, and, you know, I distanced from the pack, and the pack doesn't always accept that too kindly. So I took some heat for it, but, you know, I feel like I did this for, you know, reasons. I mean, I feel like it's sort of my life journey to come and help create the paradigm shift that's going to help people take a proactive approach towards their health. And so I'm willing to take some heat because I believe in what I'm doing. I haven't had enough experience yet in San Francisco. I think it's going to be a little easier for me up here. It's a bigger city. And I think, you know, I'll find some closed-minded people and I'll gravitate towards the open-minded people and mm-hmm. make it work.
Yeah, my feeling is always my job is not to convince you. I'm just here to provide you information if you want it.
Right.
And so I'm not going to go out there and try to convince everybody that they should follow this way. But it's great to have resources like you, and I'm sure you're going to have tons of people that feel there's another way but can't get another opinion. And they don't necessarily want to stay in the medical system. They believe in the medical system, and it's helped them a lot. But it's just, for whatever reason, there's certain things that just aren't feeling quite right to them. And I have a feeling that they're going to be flooding in your office very rapidly.
Well, I hope so. But you know what? I mean, I try and combine. I combine high technology things too. Like I do CT coronary angiography, which is a new technique where we can kind of look inside the walls of the arteries. It's non-invasive. There was a big article in Time magazine in September 6th that talked about how to prevent a heart attack. And I've been doing this for 3 years with this technology, the machines, the experts in the field combining all that. And I think now it's becoming more mainstream, which I'm excited about. And I sort of try, you know, and combine the lifestyle stuff with the high-tech tools like, you know, preventive imaging, certainly, you know, high-end lab tests to really put it all together into a science-based, and I sort of call it a high-tech, high-touch approach.
Great.
Tell us a little bit more about the Body Plan Institute. It's downtown San Francisco.
Yep.
And also, I'd like to know more about the body scanning and the types of things that you're doing there as far as prevention.
Sure. Well, we, you know, what we do is some preventive imaging stuff, and I focus mainly on heart scans, which is a non-invasive test looking for calcium and plaque in the arteries. And we also do the CT angiogram. Sometimes in smokers, we'll do lung imaging to make sure there's no early cancers. So that's one component of what we do down there. But we're not really a body scan place, and, you know, we really kind of focus it on heart and preventing heart disease, and we integrate that in with the experts we talked about, you know, from nutritionists to health psychologists to fitness people. We also do high-end laboratory testing in terms of metabolic evaluations. We do exercise and fitness testing. We do nutritional testing and recommendations. So we kind of – it's called body plan because we assess everything, and then we create a customized plan that you can – live with, and it incorporates your goals. So it really is an institute that's trying to help focus, you know, determine what's going on, create a plan, and then help you carry out the plan.
Who's coming? What's the audience? I mean, are we talking about folks that are now becoming, you know, curious and proactive in their health, or people that are beginning to have some challenges and saying, hey, is there another way? What can I do?
So it's a little bit of both. You know, I see some people that are healthy. Those are sort of it's not that many people that are taking this approach now. Hey, I feel great. Let me go in and make sure I'm great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we see a few. A lot of times it's people who are getting overweight and their brother just died suddenly. And often, unfortunately, it takes something to trigger people to come and see us. But, you know, we'll take what we can. I mean, anything that gets people in that we can then help them and direct them and improve their quality. You know, I'm really a quality of life guy. I think all this stuff, bottom line, is you want to have great quality of life. And part of that quality of life is attitude. Part of it is your health. I mean, there's a whole, mm-hmm. you know, science behind quality of life, I think.
And then there's the whole question of the insurance companies.
The insurance companies, yeah,
and their willingness to support me in preventing illness.
Sure,
they tend to only want to be around if something bad goes on.
Sure,
although the company that I have, although I don't want to say the name, but it involves a color, and they paid for a physical, uh-huh. right, once a year, that kind of thing. Do they do anything else to help people get scanned or get checked for? I mean, even if it's in their family, it would make sense that they would go and use the most modern technology today to, as early as possible in life, to discern, you know, if they have a challenge.
Right.
Do you understand what their take is on this?
No, they don't. You know, really, again, prevention and preventive imaging is not something that, or, you know, a lot of times physicals is not something that proactive health is not something the insurance companies want to pay for. And you'd think, you know, it would make sense over if they looked at it, just preventing one heart attack or one bypass surgery would save them a lot of money. But that's not how they look at it. You know, there's a statistic out there that the average person lasts with one insurance company for 18 months.
Mm.
And that, you know, because a job changes or if employers yeah. changing. So, you know, I don't mean to rag on people, but bottom line is if they can save money during that 18 months, then they come out ahead. And so it's not really a long-term view they're taking towards people's health. Mm-hmm. I'll probably get some heat for that. But, you know, I totally disagree with taking a reactive approach. And I think over time, as more evidence – this is a new field. This is a new science. So in their defense, there's not a whole lot of studies out there that prove what – we're doing. And mm-hmm. I think as those studies come, they'll be forced more and more to cover things like heart scans, preventive maintenance. They're covering colonoscopies looking for colon cancer. Mm-hmm. It took them 15 years to cover mammography looking for breast cancer. So this will come, but, you know, how many more people have to die needlessly before those changes happen?
Right.
Mm.
I would just love to get from personal perspective from you. You had this practice that was going really well when you were working with, you know, the traditional treating people with surgery and those kind of things. Was there a shift? Was there an experience? Was there something happened? What triggered for you, wow, there's a better way and I'm going to change my approach?
You know, I can't think of one particular event or patient. It was sort of just, you know, a culmination. And right after I got to Santa Barbara and started working as a surgeon, I started trying to put together my first preventive program and got all these professionals together. And no one wanted to sign up for it. No one. And so I had some children and put it on the back burner and watched the technology side of things and then saw some of the leaps that were going in imaging. And I saw that then now we could look inside arteries non-invasively. So I thought, well, how about combining that with the prevention team? And so I got back into it and, you know, started putting programs together. It just was years of rushing in the middle of the night and putting in stents and trying to save people at the last second. And I just disagree. I mean, it's important. Mm-hmm. If, you know, someone
right.
needs to do that, but I have a different mission. I have a different path in my life, and it's to help people prevent. I mean, I just felt that from the inside out and was one of the people that acted on it. So
that's great. Well, let's, in the last couple minutes, just give people an opportunity to find you. So if you can give your website again, that would be great.
Sure, and it's being updated now. It still has some Santa Barbara information on it. But it's www.bodyplan.com. We also have bodyplaninstitute.com, either of those. And we're down at 325 Sacramento. So that's right in the financial district across from the Embarcadero Center. And great staff and really good people who I think are great professionals who want to help people.
Great. Well, it's been great having you on the show. Thank you so much.
It's been great being here. I really enjoyed it.
Yes, thank you so much. This is really an ideal topic for us with Healthful Living and for Reality Sandwich, where each week we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, the body, and the planet. And this one is really right in there as far as addressing a inherent truth of about the nature of our collective health here on the planet. And this spiraling epidemic of heart disease and strokes and diabetes in our nation, and this incredible need for people to really step into their own lives and take responsibility and realize that, you know, that they do have a choice about what their life is going to be like, what their health is going to be like. And there are now increasingly phenomenal resources to assist in that personal choice. And we want to continue on this show to provide, you know, very fascinating people that are, you know, providing insights and new knowledge to empower us as we go forward. So thank you so much for being on.
Well, thank you.
You've been listening to Dr. Tony DeFrance from the Body Plan Institute.
Yes.
And this is KPOO San Francisco. And before we end today, do you want to – we have an announcement for a upcoming community event, and I'm wondering if you want to read that or you want me to do so?
Yeah, you could, that's from Camila. Camila Aguilar is one of our co-hosts here on the show. She operates Studio B here in San Francisco. They have all kinds of performances and community events there.
So she has something this Friday night. It's a free event on October 7th from 7 to 9 called Hidden Power, and it's by Charles Durber. And there's a lot about political parties and elections, and it's, you know, showing. Well, why don't I read this? Political parties and elections are increasingly political theater, and with real power hidden behind a smokescreen of propaganda, carefully manipulated cultural and religious wars, and voting ritual. However, a deeper kind of hidden power is waking up the grassroots social movements working for progressive change. If the Democratic Party can rally with these movements, America can be returned to its people. So it's going to be a reading from this author, Charles Durber, and you are welcome to find out more information. You can reserve a spot at 415-255-9794. And again, it's the Studio B, which is in Potrero Hill. And one more time, that number, 255-9794. So this has been Reality Sandwich. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant. You can find me and you can find Martin and I both at healthfullivingsf.com.
That's right, Julie. And listeners can go to the website, and many of the past episodes of Reality Sandwich are now up on the website for streaming. We've gotten a few emails about that, and I've been doing my best to learn the technological insides and outsides of that, and it's going well. So this show will also be up on the site probably before the end of the weekend. And all new shows should be up there as well fairly soon. A couple of quick musical announcements. Our listeners in the past have heard the Dave Matthews Blues Band. They're going to be at Jack's Bistro tomorrow night in Jack London Square. Down Home Blues, the way you like it. I always got to get a plug for my brother on that one. And Micropixie, who's been on the show a few times, and we've been playing her music quite a bit over the past few weeks, is playing at the Sub Lounge tomorrow night at 20th and 3rd Street in San Francisco. You can find her new album at aliceinstevieWonderland.com. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified medical hypnotherapist. You can catch me also at healthfullivingsf.com. And it's been a pleasure to be with you this week.
Thanks for listening. Stay tuned every Thursday at noon.